It's time for Driving Me Crazy, coming to you live from Beechtree Studios near beautiful Pinehurst, North Carolina. This is the only show where a husband and wife drive, talk cars and life, and still love one another each day. Here's John and Laurie. Or is it Laurie and John? Oh, take it away, you crazy kids.
You crazy kid, you.
I love you, Johnny. And good morning, guys. Good morning, everybody.
And good morning, Q. I love you both.
Thank you.
Is that permitted? Is that permitted, you know, on an automobile show? Can you have all that love?
That oh, okay? Yes.
Yeah,
sure. All right, good. I'm feeling better.
It starts with cars and emanates throughout. Yes, that's it.
And life.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
God.
It's very chilly down here. How about up in New York? How are things with you?
It's cold, but I'm warm, you know. What can I tell you?
You're in the apartment,
reliving,
aren't you?
Yeah, exactly. But I'm reliving the hugs that I missed today, you know, life is a transition. So even though it's sparse right now, maybe the
life
hugs will show up in a week or two or three or four.
Yeah.
Life is a journey.
Oh, my God, is it one? Who would have thought? Well, that's why we have cars, you know, which is so great because we can get out of our realm.
And
know,
make the journey.
Exactly. And change the life and the scenery.
And on that happy note, we're going to talk today.
Well, wait a minute. We can't exactly change the scenery. We're clamped down in North Carolina, and I think you're clamped down in New York.
We're clamped down.
Yeah.
Before.
We wanted to change the scenery. Johnny and I actually were hoping to get up to upstate New York this week. But
really?
I mean, it's just the problem is, you know, and also to swing over and possibly see grandchildren. But the problem is.
Right.
Restrictions, and we could not be, I mean, we're, you know, thankfully we're fine, but we could not be assured of being allowed, you know, to come back in time for Christmas, God forbid something happened. But
well,
it's,
and the other thing was...
So you mean you're allowed to travel up to New York State, but then you may not be allowed back to North Carolina?
Right.
Well, we might not be allowed out of,
because of quarantine.
Out of New York State, yeah.
Yeah. And the lady
how
that we were going to see when we went
New York
to New York.
State. Does that work?
We would have to have had a
New
COVID.
State?
We would have to have a COVID test within 3 days of entering New York State. We'd have to stay in New York
God.
State for 3 days, and on the fourth day be tested again in order to be allowed out of New York State, because if the test proved positive, we would then have to stay within in New York State for 2 weeks before being allowed to go back
God.
Home. And so
plus the nice lady we were going to go see is older than we are, and she was concerned,
we didn't want to
jeopardize
her. But so there you go, Hezzy. What we were going to do is, if that happened, of course, we were going to knock on your door and spend Hanukkah and Christmas with you, but now that's off the table.
It's okay.
Sorry.
I'm lighting my candles tonight. And I'll have to remember that you might be on the way.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Is there any way to bypass New York State in order to get up to Vermont?
Well, not really, because
no.
Where we were going was actually in New York State. So, but it's all fine.
Uh-huh.
This too shall pass. It's very, very unnerving. And, of course, for those people who are sick and those people who have lost loved ones, such a difficult time, especially this time of year. But on that happy note,
absolutely.
Let's talk about
yeah.
the car of the week, which is, drumroll, the 2021 K5 GT Line all-wheel drive. Now, before I let Johnny say one more word,
Kia.
The car for next week, which just pulled into the driveway about an hour ago, is the Hyundai Veloster N, and I just actually drove it a little, and it's a beautiful car.
Really?
Beautiful
it's gorgeous,
car, yeah. But
I just thought it was so low that I would never be able to get out of it if I ever got into it.
Not
I
as low as some.
I just love the look.
Not as low
oh,
as
really?
Some. But
you can roll out of them. It's getting off the ground. That's the big problem.
No, but it's
but
a
Johnny,
beautiful.
I've got
the
a question.
Styling is superb.
Oh,
it's very sexy lines.
It's gorgeous. But now, back to our K5 GT line.
Yes.
All-wheel drive.
Kia.
I'm going to pose a question to my beloved husband, which is this. And the reason I brought
up. Answer 7.
Honey, listen to me. Gosh, Johnny, you got to listen. We go through this on a regular basis, probably hourly. Johnny, you got to listen. Here's my question to you, honey. We just came off of the Kia, okay? Now we're going to be going into the Hyundai Veloster. Now, both of these cars I have difficulty with from this standpoint. These are cars that are designed to be, and this is a horrible thing for me to say, sports car wannabes. They are and they aren't. And where I have a difficulty is, although they have the power and certainly are beautifully designed, they're noisy. They're loud. And they have some handling attributes. Yeah. And they have some handling attributes of a sports car. But on the other hand, they want to be a sedan. And this is where I'm having my difficulty. So, Johnny, could you explain what I'm trying to say and feeling and thinking?
No. What's your next question?
Well, did you change the laundry from the washing machine into the dryer?
No, it was already there. I just started a new load.
Okay. All right.
Let me bail you out here for just a second.
Please, darling.
The wonderful, listen, I don't know, Hezzy, whether you looked at that Kia K5 styling, but they've got a real futuristic almost look to it. The lights come around underneath the headlights. There's a little set of lighting that looks like almost like a lightning bolt that comes around and runs by the hood.
Beautiful.
I mean, it's super looking car. It really, and it's a four door, plenty of room. First of all, plenty of room. Of course, I almost broke my neck twice because my vertically challenged wife always, well, at least on this one, she put the seat up, and of course, then I have to put once I get in and whack my head, then I have to put the seat down.
No,
I got to
interrupt just for a second with regard to your wife. With all due respect, you've got to do something about all this because your husband is suffering because you don't readjust the seat.
Yeah,
I'm afraid he's going to get a concussion one day.
And I'm expected to put the toilet seat down all the time.
Well, that's a standard thing. If you're a man, that's the standard.
Well, I think putting the seat down ought to be standard in the car.
I grew up with women who always told me that. Oh, yeah, I didn't know that.
When Johnny hears a splash and a scream from the bathroom, he knows what's going on. But putting the seat down, and here's an observation.
And it was electronic, so it's not a big deal.
Well, now, and it is not. It's manual on the Hyundai Veloster.
Hey, say that for next week.
Uh-huh.
Well, here's the thing. In both of these cars, the only way that I could get in and out without getting my knees jammed under the steering wheel was to raise the steering wheel.
Yeah, I can understand that.
And so I've raised the steering
wheel.
And then I put the seat down as low as possible because otherwise Johnny will lose more hair on the top of his head.
And I don't have much left. So
we've got to be very careful. This is a conservation.
Join
this
the club,
conservation
Johnny.
Easement.
Yeah.
but this, again, is all, and Johnny, you still haven't answered my question. This is all about it's like the mother of this car was a sedan and the father of this car was a sports coupe.
What I got out of this, because what you're really leading into is who would buy this car. That's something we always talk about. And, of course, it doesn't sound like it would be people like us necessarily. However, Lori's right.
I would have to harken back 30 or 40 years in order to be able to think that this is a car for me.
Right.
Because I could hear it rumbling as you turn the engine on.
Well, it's not really a rumble. The thing that makes it a sports car kind of wannabe. It doesn't rumble like you think of when you think of even the Corvette or any of the muscle cars. It's not that. It's more of a, and it's not a high-pitched whine. It's like a minor cat roar or something. I don't know. But they have got dual exhausts on it to give it, this sound kind of a thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you got this nice color combination, the sporty styling with the front, with the scoops on the side in front of the wheels, and this aerodynamic design, and it's got a on the back, it's got the, it's not a scoop, it's a, I'll think of it in a minute, but it's
like
designed to have
in the back?
Yeah, kind of like an airfoil. And it's, there's a word for it, but I'll think of it in a minute. But it's, so it's got this sort of racy kind of car look. But it's really a sedan. Uh-huh. It's a four-cylinder, you know, and it's a turbo four-cylinder. And it's the same turbo four-cylinder overall that I see in a lot of vehicles, meaning that it's great once you get the four chipmunks to agree that you really want to go. When they kick in, it's super, but there's always that time lag between when you decide to step down on it and when they decide that's what they should be doing. But listen, it jumps. When it does pick up, it'll get up to 60 in, like, no time. It was really, you know, I was really impressed with that. Handling is great. Ride was good. I thought it was quiet, except for, like Lori says, it's more of the engine noise kind of thing, but it's not engine. It's actually the exhaust. That area, they actually have the dampening windshield in this one, which I thought that, I love that kind of thing. You know, when they put this kind of dampening technology so that the windshield actually helps keep the noise out of the car. I just think that's, that kind of thinking is really cool. All of the safety features, remember Kia, Hyundai, so many of them now, almost all of them, have these wonderful features, safety features. Certainly it's loaded with that. And, of course, all the drivers assist when you set it on cruise control and it's monitoring and keeping you in the middle of a lane and it's monitoring the traffic in front of you and stopping if you don't and looking for pedestrians, same with backing up. All of those safety features that we always talk about are on this car. And I'm sort of jumping around, but there's so many things that sort of seem to work together, because when you talk about all that and then you talk about a car, which is the Kia K5 is, that fully loaded, I mean, we only added like one thing to this car, but fully loaded, it's $31,000.
Carpet?
Oh, right. Yeah. Got the floor mat.
No
problem there. That's all included now.
Interesting, when I read your review and I saw that the you know, the top of the line was like 31,000.
Yeah.
It showed me that all the automobile manufacturers, they have like a, you know, a small little bit of strata where they fit right in.
Yeah.
And they price themselves to a particular price point. And it's amazing how much they can accomplish within that price point and what they offer or don't offer.
I agree with
price
you.
Points. Very competitive.
Yeah.
And I think that we're seeing a realignment in the automotive industry.
Well, and Kia, remember, Kia and Hyundai are the ones who really, especially Hyundai, I think, really led all of that. You know,
making
making a less expensive car, actually pretty inexpensive car, and then adding all of these safety features, which, you know, people want, anybody wants. Then, by going to the four cylinders, reducing the size of the engine, making the engine much more efficient, you get the gas mileage up. So this one gets 34 miles per gallon on the highway, 29 overall, 26 around town, so 29 overall, 29 miles to the gallon.
Yeah.
You know, so it gets good to ask, what's the one thing when you talk about a car that everybody pays attention to? Gas prices. So, and gas prices have consistently stayed under $2. So if they're under $2 and you're getting 29 miles per gallon, averaging 29 miles per gallon, you're not paying much for gas, and people like that. So they're aware of the mentality that goes not only into purchasing, which would be what's the price and what do I get for the money, but also what is the cost of then of insurance? Because if you're loaded with all these safety things, your insurance goes down. If you're not driving a great deal, your insurance goes down. If you are paying attention to these kinds of things, and I think that the car manufacturers, especially these kinds of car manufacturers, are paying attention to price, just like you said, what do you get for the money? What are the things Americans look at? Comfort, looks, gas mileage. Does it seat four comfortably? You can say it seats five, but the truth is it seats four comfortably and four adults. You put four adults in this car comfortably, and in the back seat, that middle part where you could put somebody, it actually folds down. It's got a nice big wide armrest with cup holders and all the things that you would want to be comfortable in the back seat. So it's got all of those kinds of things. Here's another thing that I think they think about from Americans. You got to see my hands going around and pointing and doing things. I'm actually talking with my hands. But the other thing that I think that they look at is Americans like, at least I think, Americans like convenience. Remember that old joke about the easy button? I forget who it was that had maybe, but you remember, and everybody likes the easy button. Americans like the easy button. Well, what's easy about this car? First, from the driver's standpoint, everything's right where it ought to be. Everything's right where it ought to be. Steering wheel, you push the speaker, you tell it you want to call somebody. You can push it and do the navigation. You can, you know, say some navigation thing. Got a nice big, ours had a 10-inch screen. I think it comes with an 8-inch. Ours was a 10-and-a-quarter-inch screen. Nice big screen just to the right of the steering wheel. Simple, you know, your gear shift right where it should be. What do you do? What do you have? You have park, reverse, neutral, and drive. You know, and you can make it so it's manual. If you want to use paddle shifters, it's got those. But it's simple. You know, it's just what it's supposed to be. You have drive modes. You have five drive modes. Smart, which lets it pick, you know, what you want. You have normal. You have sports. That's where you, again, back to the sports car kind of thing they're trying to. You have sports. You have snow, that's four. I'm trying to think what the fifth one was. Can't think of it. That'll come to me, too. But anyway, it's got some driving modes. You can choose the driving modes you want. Most people, I think, would either put it in normal or put it in smart. Let it pick, you know, let it figure it out. But it's a simple vehicle. You don't need a scholarly degree to be able to drive this car, to know what the car is doing. It was interesting. When we got it, the first day, went out and started it up, and the low pressure light, low tire pressure light, came on the dash. And then a picture of the four wheels came up, and it told you which wheel was low and what the air pressure in it was. So they were supposed to be like 30 pounds of pressure in all of them. This one was like 25, so it was down some. So I took it over to the local, one of the local gas stations, and I put air into it. Didn't have any more problems. Then yesterday, I got the low pressure light again. I thought, oh, that tire must have a slow leak in it, but it wasn't. It was now actually the left rear tire that was 1 pound. It was 29 instead of 30. So, and they picked it up this morning, so I know that they'll fix that. But the point being, remember when you didn't have those and you just wound up having a flat tire you had to change on the side of the road? But now when you start the car up, it's going through, which when you think about it, because of the computers and the way that they control a lot of the things about the car, that it now is looking at all of the various parts, internal parts to the car, making sure everything's okay, and warning you not only that something is amiss, but this is what's amiss, and this is why it's amiss, and this is what, you know, sort of suggests this is what you need to do to fix it. I thought that's pretty cool, actually. So, you know, so there's a lot of just simplicity to the car that I thought was really good. Ours had, you talk about gadgets. Ours had this, I think it's a relatively new feature, and I can see some drawbacks to it, but right in front of the armrest, there's a vertical slot in which you drop your phone, and it charges. Now, if you only put your phone in there, then I think it's great. It works like a charm. But it's just one of those things where what happens if you drop change in there or something? You're going to have a dickens of a time getting it out. Do you know what I mean? It's the right size for if you drop a Kleenex down there or something, you may have trouble fishing it out of there. But as far as its location and the way that it's set up, you put your phone in there, it's charging all the time you're driving. You have hands-free. I mean, you tie your phone into the car, which everybody does now. Very easy, very simple thing to do with your phone and on the car. And drop your phone in there, and you just use the button to have it call people to answer the phone.
I've got to ask you a question because you were talking about, you know, when people get into the car, everything is exactly where it should be. I remember the good old days when, like, you had a Saab and you turned the key, it was on your console on the floor.
Yeah.
Seemed to make a lot of sense. Are we getting away from all of that, you know, that new, concepts that are being thought about? There may be some validity to it, or are we just becoming very homogeneic in the way we build cars?
I think there's actually some thought that went into this. Remember, more and more of the cars do not have keys. The cars have keyless entry, a push button on the dash, and it's all meant for you to carry that key around in your pocket and then not have to worry about a key. You can duplicate a key. You can get a car started by just pushing, if you've got a key that's similar to, or you can get one made for another car, then you can get in and start the car. Well, these don't work that way. If you don't have the masterpiece, you can't get the car started. Mm. You get in, you push the button, it says no key detected. You're dead in the water. Okay. It's a safety deterrent, or it's a safety feature that deters, I would think, people trying to steal the car. It's not easy to steal one of these cars. I'm sure professionals could all the time. But again, go back to all these things and put it together. Would you steal a $31,000 car? It's a lot of risk for very little reward.
I would hope not.
Yeah.
Well, I wouldn't even be stealing a $250,000 Rolls Royce either. I'm just not that sort
you,
of boy.
That's you and me, Hezzy. That's not the professionals. So.
Johnny, I want to go back to what you were talking about, the drive mode select.
Go back.
Yeah.
It's Eco.
Eco, that's the one.
Sport.
Yep.
Sport Plus with launch control. Comfort.
Oh.
Plus automatically adjustable smart or create your own custom style. So those are the modes. Oh. But again, you still haven't answered my question. The child that this car is from the father who's the sports coupe and the mother who's the four-door sedan.
Young people. Young families.
Now, I would not agree with that.
Well, you asked me.
I know, but I don't believe that there's enough room in this low-slung car for a couple of child car seats in the back.
Yes, there is.
Okay, and also,
it's big enough in the back for two adults. If you can get two adults back there, you can get two car seats.
I understand, but don't you think as a family car, that's not what was on the forefront of Kia's mind?
Well, I think it could be the young urban professionals, yuppies we used to call them, the young urban professional who is married. They don't have any children yet. But they got this nice, stylish-looking car.
Yeah, but I'm talking about it as a family car. I don't see it as a family car.
Well, you don't, but I'm telling you that if you're a young urban professional, you're married, recently married, blah, 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 and you're going to have a child the next year or two, this car you can keep, use. You don't have to upgrade or do anything. It's good for a while.
Well, now, a few things that are very, very good is the gas mileage. At 34 Highway, 26 City for an average of 29. That's very good.
Yeah.
The safety 5-star ratings are not on our Moroni sheet, so I don't know what they are, but it seemed to be a pretty sound car. I mean, truly did. I had trouble with the noise, with the
the exhaust noise, the sound that the engine made.
Well, even when the car was, gliding along, it still is not a quiet car like some. And I know it's because of this sporty,
It didn't bother me.
Well, that's the whole thing, though. Doesn't that serve a different client? I'm in my 70s. I don't think that would be a car that I would look for. I would rather have it quieter.
Yeah.
But again,
if you're a young urban professional, rapidly moving up, you want to create this image. You are creating this image. You're married, going to have children in the next year or two. You want to look good, don't want to spend a lot of money doing it, and you have a little bit of a sports car thing in your heart. It's your kind of car.
Now, the K5 LX starts at $23,490. The one we drove was $31,300.
Yeah. But go back. What do they start at?
$23,490.
Well, say $24,000. Anyone who's got a job can probably afford this car.
Mm-hmm. Now, the GT line, is what we had.
Yeah, Grand Touring. I'm sure.
Yeah, that started at $25,000 and change.
And that's still not much money for a nice car.
No, mm-hmm. It's not. And then the top of the line, which will be or is supposedly available this month, is the K5 G. We'd have the G line. We had the GT line. It's the K5 GT available coming this month with a starting price of $30,490. So each of these 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 models, come with a little more as you go up the scale, which, of course, is true with anything. But
well, if you look at the Maroni, and I know that you probably got it there, but
I
this do. Car, star, ours, the GT line, all-wheel drive, and I don't want to skip over that. This is an all-wheel drive vehicle, which is really good. All right, so, and it starts at $29,000, and they only added, the special paint and some of these other little features that, and I think maybe one safety feature, and Lori can point those out. There was only really one addition.
No, honey, the K5 GT line starts at $25,390.
Okay. What did they add to this one to get it up to 30?
An 8-inch touchscreen.
It went from an 8 to a 10 and a quarter.
And then I think that it's a turbo four-cylinder engine.
Right.
And the auto emergency braking technology for their driveway system.
Yep.
And, again, it's just – so that's the base price on the GT line. The one before it is the LXS. And the difference in price is like $700. I mean, it's very minor. So.
And my point is that on this one, it starts at 29, and ours was 31 with everything, including whatever.
No, it starts at 25, honey.
Okay. Well, what did they put on this car that brought it to 31? Look at the Maroni, and to the right, you'll see – what the additional options were added.
They added
how much?
Okay.
How much are those options?
The options come to an additional $445 plus $800. So the additional equipment is the red interior package, the red Syntex seating material, which was the type of upholstery, the all-wheel drive factor, and the wolf gray exterior paint.
Right.
The 10.25-inch touchscreen and map care. I don't know what the map care thing was. The smart cruise control, which was great, and then the highway driving assist, which is always great.
Right.
So those were the additional features for very small change.
Those are only $1,200.
Right.
Well, if they're $1,200 and it was $31, then our car cost $29 with all the things that were on it.
Right, okay.
It may start at $25, but this particular model
this, okay, I see what you're saying. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Beautiful car, stylishly designed. Again, I'm still hung up on this,
noise,
and the fact that it's not the car, it's me, because I'm having a challenge figuring out, who this car is for.
A friend of mine used to have that, and I would be riding with him, and I'd hear this, and I'd say, "What's that noise?" And he'd go, "I don't know," and he'd turn the radio up. So there are ways to fix the problem without actually looking for the problem.
Oh, listen, we've got 1 minute to go. I want to tell a life story. This is, I don't think anybody's going to appreciate this. Johnny didn't when I came home and told him. Last night I was driving home, and I was listening to 148, Sirius 148, which is Radio Classics, fabulous, fabulous station that broadcasts all old radio shows. And there was a Red Skelton Christmas show on, and it was called The Little Christmas Tree, a beautiful story. And Red Skelton played the voice of the tree, and then there was another actor who played the voice of Santa Claus. And so... very heartwarming story. And then at the very end, Red Skelton says to the audience, he says, he said, our sponsor was so kind. Our sponsor, he said, was Tide. Tide laundry detergent, and they mm-hmm. permitted us to do this entire show without commercial interruption. And he said, because he said, wasn't that so kind that we could do the whole show without a commercial interruption? I burst into tears, and I caught myself saying out loud, I wish we had those days back when people didn't care about the money and the world racing so fast by, and they could stop and pause and realize what the goodness in life is all about. And maybe it was that little message that I heard Red Skelton say on the radio 50, 60, 70 years ago that just struck a chord for this holiday season, Hanukkah, Christmas, that maybe it's not about all of the focusing on all of the terrible situations we find ourselves in these days, but on the goodness and the little kindness that means so much.
The beauty of what you're saying is, unfortunately, we don't hear that often enough.
Amen.
But we forget.
No, it's true. We just forget.
And
we must try not to.
Yep.
Yeah, exactly.
We must try to remember and then pray and hope for better times.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I was like a baby blubbering. I just thought the way he said, and he said,
"Honey, it's 10:30."
Okay, honey. Well, on that happy note, happy Hanukkah. We'll talk to you next week.
And the Honda of Velociter next
so
week.
Much.
Vroom,
vroom. Have
a great
weekend.
Enjoy the Velociter.
Bye, everybody. Be safe. Be happy.
Hi, buddy. Thank you.
Bye. Wonderful. They're always such a pleasure. John and Lori Wiles. I don't know. It just seems that they add a little bit of life and spice to the cars and the cars. And it's always very exciting because their personality is somehow engaged in every car they drive. It's unbelievable. I don't know how they do it, but they do it well, that's for sure. Well, let's look at some things that are happening here locally because there's a lot that is going on the local scene. So bear with me a moment as I move on to some other screens, and hopefully we'll get there in a moment and just see what's going on. 1 second. Here we are. We were intending to speak to New York State Assembly member Nader Sayers, who represents District 90. However, he won't be able to show. He's not scheduled for Thursday. He would be scheduled for tomorrow. But he has a very, very compelling article, which he presented to the New York State Assembly. So the title of this is that New York State Assemblyman Nader Sayers, District 90, addressing the New York State Assembly by letter regarding the antiquated school funding formula. So he writes, dear honorable members of the assembly, mind you, the letter was published on the 7th of December. We published it yesterday. And this is what he writes. I hope in your loved ones remain in good spirits amid this extraordinary time. This year has presented unique challenges for all New Yorkers, especially the impact on education, our students, and educators. Amid pandemic-related restrictions, our educators and students have been forced to adapt to a unique learning environment that can change at a moment's notice. And while no school has been spared from the impact of COVID-19, the effects of the pandemic have exacerbated the persistent chronic funding inequities stemming from an antiquated school funding formula, which impedes the academic success of predominantly minority and special needs students statewide by no fault of their own. Here in Yonkers, the outcome of this outdated formula has had a negative impact as detrimental as the pandemic to the general well-being of our students. Our parents have been forced to shoulder the cost of devices for remote learning, while our school district has had to ration the finite number of devices to one per family, only if they qualify for a free or reduced price lunch. And despite being situated in one of the wealthiest counties in the nation, Children in the third largest school district in New York State are regionally forced to huddle over devices and schedule when they'll be available to complete assignments so as to not interfere with the education of their siblings. In addition, ensuring the safety of our educators and students when they do return to classes has brought unforeseen expenses. The costs associated with sanitizing and preparing our schools for COVID-19 have exceeded millions of dollars. In crafting a legislative remedy, we identified many school districts across our state who are being impacted by the outdated and inequitable funding formula, which pits the economic reality in a respect school district against the general wealth of a county. So from Suffolk County on Long Island to Erie County in western New York, schools serving our mutual constituencies are being shortchanged thousands of dollars per student in amounts totaling millions per year. In general, the students most impacted by funding inequities are students of color, primarily Black, Latino, special education and bilingual education, and the economically disadvantaged. The Yonkers School District is not alone in this dilemma. Districts across New York will benefit from a new, revisited state funding formula, which can only reflect the economic standing and needs of both students and those and their families. It's why I'm asking for your support in my legislation to promote school funding equity across our state and end this persistent injustice. This legislation, Assembly 8700 of 2019-20, would require the Education Commissioner to take adjustments or to make adjustments to the funding formula payout for districts which meet certain criteria, including the percentage of students receiving free or reduced price lunch, the number of students enrolled as English language learners, ELL, and students enrolled in special education. The legislation also takes into account a district's wealth ratio and its total enrollment growth and whether it's located in a high wealth ratio county. I encourage all lawmakers to sign onto this bill to correct the fundamental inequity which plagues too many of our disenfranchised students across our state every single day. A two-tiered education system is inherently unjust and anachronistic to our values as New Yorkers. It's important that we don't leave our most vulnerable children behind. Thank you for your consideration on this urgent matter, and signed sincerely, Assembly Member Nader Sage, 90th District. And at the bottom of the replication of this letter that was addressed to the New York State Assembly, you could find the Assemblyman's phone number in Albany, the district office in Yonkers, and you can also find his email should you care to use any of that. So very, very encouraging to say the least, but very well expressed and typical of Nader Sayers. He really, this is his first term. He just got reelected. There was no opposition, and he's really pushed the envelope tremendously so, because there's always been talk about inequity in funding, particularly for Yonkers, but all the personnel that were involved in different political offices, and I've been on the scene for 21 years, have done absolutely nothing. Nothing. Do you hear me? Absolutely nothing to change this equation, which fairly views Yonkers, which is a poor city in relationship to the county itself, which is much wealthier. But don't get me wrong. Yonkers isn't the only one that is burdened. You've got problems in Mount Vernon. You've got problems in Ossining. There are other problems in Portchester. All communities within Westchester County. You've got similar concerns out in Long Island, in upstate New York. We need to fix this formula it's not working. And yet the audacity of so many people in politics to have just talked the game, to talk, but never walked the walk. And unfortunately, 21 years later, we're still at the same point of argument and rather than discussion to ameliorate these concerns. So I've got to hand it to Assemblymember Nader Sage for, you know, literally being at the cutting edge, which is phenomenal. Let me just see. I think I'm not sure if we told you the Recreational Equipment Inc. company, the REI store situated in Ridge Hill, is going to close on or about February 17th of 2021. And what I didn't realize is, and this is very interesting, somebody even commented about it, you could buy the REI products through Amazon. And evidently more people are doing that through Amazon. And some people have said to me yesterday, because I was questioning, why would a company that's product line is so well known and has the capacity of ordering, the products that they sell online through REI, why would they be failing when it was such a known product? And the answer is simple. Evidently, you could buy the REI products at Amazon. They charged you less than REI did. So at the end, REI ended up engaging in their own demise. If what the people told me, because they purchased the stuff through Amazon, they said it was cheaper. Well, you know, if that's the case, it's just no good. And, you know, the problem is that so many businesses are permitting Amazon to take control of their product line, and they, if they sell it at a lesser cost, which so many people do, that's no good. It's literally a monopoly, and it's because so many businesses are going to go belly up. And again, the issue is that when you had a company like REI, and they operate out of a particular area, that particular store was based out of Yonkers. Now that it's going to fold, who's going to give a donation to the Girl Scouts? Who's going to give a donation to people with disabilities? Certainly not going to be Amazon. So how do you balance this, I guess, dynamic that's been on the landscape for at least 50, maybe 75 years? How are we going to resurrect that? Or are we going to simply submit to Amazon being the purveyor of all kinds of products, from all kinds of goods to also food? What's that going to do? You know, what's going to happen to the supermarkets that are out there? Are they going to shut down too? And are we only going to be buying from Amazon? What's going to happen to the landscape? Are we going to be living in barren cities that have nothing but housing? And that's it, housing and business, offices, which are probably going to be less and less because people are moving away from having to travel to an office. They'll be telecommuting. But then there are a lot of other people that may not even be able to afford to order all their stuff online, even though they deliver. So it's really questionable. We're at a juncture at the moment. And I don't know if it's a juncture of foreboding, but it's certainly a juncture that puts a little bit of fear, because we really don't know where we're going yet. So rather than to conjecture of how things are going to be, because we're unfamiliar with all the catalysts that may or may not inform our final decision, 10 years, 5 years, 25 years down the road. It may just be an evolutionary level of attainment, and because there are no prognosticators out there to tell us how it's really going to be. So it's going to be very, very interesting where and how all this leads. This is also very, very interesting. There's a case preview that came before the United States Supreme Court. The case is the $124 billion question, which the justices are to hear an argument in the dispute over Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac shareholder suits. Well, the Supreme Court in June ruled in SALA Law versus Consumer Financial Protection Bureau that statutory restrictions on the president's ability to remove the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau violated the Constitution's separation of powers. So this past Wednesday, the court will consider, or rather on Wednesday, which was actually yesterday, the court will consider whether a different set of restrictions governing the removal of the director of the Federal Housing Finance Agency must suffer the same fate. The question arises in a lawsuit brought by shareholders of mortgage giants Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, challenging a 2012 agreement between the FHFA and the Treasury Department that the shareholders say nationalized, quote-unquote, Fannie and Freddie, leading to an astonishing windfall of $125 billion for the federal government. So a very, very long explanation of this. This article was written by none other than Amy Howe of the she writes the SCOTUS blog, and just absolutely brilliant and explanation of it all. So very, very important. So it's that, just that simple. I see I need to make some corrections on this particular article, so I'll keep that afloat. And then I want you to move on to some other things which you may find pertinent. And first is, let's going over to Lebanon. Evidently, a Lebanese judge has charged the caretaker prime minister, ex-ministers, over the Beirut port blast. Wow, that's amazing and shocking news. Lebanon's investigating judge charged caretaker prime minister Hassan Diab and three former ministers with negligence over the Beirut port blast that killed 200 people and ravaged the capital in August. Lebanon's official news agency said that today. Now, Judge Fadi Sawan filed the charges Thursday against Diab and former finance commissioner Ali Hassan Khalil, as well as Hazi Zaiter and Youssef Finianos, both former ministers. All four were charged with negligence leading to deaths over the August 4 explosion at Beirut port, which killed more than 200 people and injured thousands. The explosion was caused by the ignition of a large stockpile of explosive material that had been stored at the port for years. The four are the most senior individuals to be indicted so far in the probe, which is being conducted in secrecy. Anger has been building up over the slow investigation, lack of answers, and the fact that no senior officials have been indicted. About 30 other security officials and port and customs officials have been detained in the probe. Well, Diab is a former university professor, resigned a few days after the blast, which leveled the port, destroyed large parts of the city. He's currently serving as caretaker prime minister until his successor forms a new government. Zaitar was transport and public works minister in 2014, followed by Finianos in 2016, who held the job until the beginning of 2020. Khalil was finance minister in 2014, 2016, and until 2020. Now, the explosion came amid an unprecedented financial meltdown, worsened by pandemic-related closures that has brought soaring inflation, poverty, and unemployment. France and the rest of the international community have been urging Lebanon's leaders to form a new government to break a political deadlock that has blocked billions of dollars in assistance. Absolutely mind-boggling. But at least it's moving ahead, which is very, very important. Move on to some other important issues. The European Union chief has published a no-deal Brexit plan to prepare the bloc for all eventualities. Well, European chief Ursula von der Leyen on Thursday published a backup plan to protect road and air travel and fishing rights if Britain leaves the Union without a trade deal. The United Kingdom left the European Union on January 31, and at the end of this month will leave the bloc single market and customs union, bringing to an end a half century of ever closer economic integration. Negotiators from London and Brussels have been trying to agree a follow-on trade pact that would govern cross-channel business after the transition period ends, but talks are deadlocked with 3 weeks to go. To prepare for a possible no-deal exit on January 1, the European Union on Thursday proposed four contingency measures to make sure air and road traffic can continue as smoothly as possible for the next 6 months. It also proposes that fishermen will still have access to each other's waters for up to a year to limit the commercial damage of a no-deal split. The plans depend on the UK offering similar initiatives. Our responsibility is to be prepared for all eventualities. That is why we are coming forward with these measures today, said von der Leyen. Well, negotiations are still ongoing. However, given that the end of the transition is very near, there is no guarantee that if and when an agreement is found, it can enter into force on time, she said. So that's the question. Johnson is working on a dinner, but it yields no results. Prime Minister Boris Johnson traveled to Brussels on Wednesday. Yesterday for a working dinner with von der Leyen to talk through the logjam, and the leaders agreed to give the negotiators until Sunday to make a breakthrough. But London is refusing to, in Johnson's view, compromise its newly reclaimed sovereignty by signing up to match future European Union regulation. Several European Union members, notably France, have been pushing for von der Leyen's commission and her negotiator, Michel Barnier, to take a tougher line and to publish the contingency plan to show they are ready for no deal. Well, the European Union Commission described the plan as a set of targeted contingency measures ensuring basic reciprocal air and road connectivity between the European Union and the UK, as well as allowing for the possibility of reciprocal fishing across or access rather by European Union and UK vessels in each other's waters. Well, the measures would come into effect on January 1. They would come to an end if a deal is found or after a fixed period. And basic air transport will continue for 6 months, provided the UK agrees to reciprocate, as will access for road haulage. Well, the interim fisheries regulations would continue until the end of 2021, but it provides for, quote, continued reciprocal access to EU and UK vessels to each other's waters. And Johnson's government insists it will assume full sovereignty over its waters on January 1st. Wow. So we'll have to see where all that goes. This is interesting as well. Law targeting extremism, but not anti-Islam, says the French minister on his visit to Qatar. France's foreign minister said during a visit to Doha on Thursday, that's today, that his country's policies against extremism had been misrepresented and were not Islamophobic. Well, that Paris has faced criticism for draft legislation designed to clamp down on Islamist radicalism that tightens rules on religious-based education and polygamy following a spate of attacks blamed on extremists. Well, Jean-Yves Le Drian said that following the attacks, our positions and statements on combating extremism were largely distorted and misrepresented as part of a campaign against our country, end quote. Then continuing, he says, our position might have been misunderstood by believers who might have felt their beliefs were being disrespected. Le Drian, in Doha for a one-day official visit, said in a media briefing. We have the utmost respect for Islam, added the French foreign minister, who has cultivated close ties with Middle East leaders under the presidencies of Emmanuel Macron and François Hollande. Well, tensions flared between France and some Muslim countries over remarks by President Macron in October defending the right. Defending the right to publish caricatures, including cartoons of the Prophet Muhammad, and suggesting Islam was in crisis. While Qatar did not directly criticize France, some prominent Qatari retailers have instituted boycotts of French products in response to the comments. Qatar's foreign minister, who spoke alongside Le Drian, said that violent extremism is not connected or linked with any religion. We must stand firmly against Islamophobic speech, just as the world stands against all forms of racist rhetoric, said Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani. Well, Muslims worldwide have protested against Macron's vehement defense of freedom of speech and right to mock religion after a French school teacher who showed his class to cartoons was murdered in October. French government on Wednesday defended draft legislation clamping down on Islamist radicalism as a law of freedom after a torrent of criticism from Muslim countries and expressions of concern from the United States. The bill is not a text aimed against religions or against the Muslim religion in particular, Prime Minister Jean Castex told reporters on Wednesday after the cabinet approved the text to present to Parliament. Analysts have said the long-term impact of the controversy would depend on France's next step. Now, dozens of prominent French brands are active in Qatar, including construction companies, retailers, and luxury labels like Louis Vuitton and beloved in the wealthy, gas-rich nation. French showpieces in Qatar include the Jean Nouvel-designed National Museum in Doha, the signaling system on the new metro railway, and an outpost of the Galerie Lafayette department store. Qatar is also an important buyer of French military hardware with its order of 36 Rafale fighter planes worth 8.7 billion euros, according to the International Institute for Strategic Studies Military Balance Survey. Very compelling news, to say the least. Now, let's move on and see what else is happening. One split second. Bear with me a moment, folks. One second. Okay. Okay. Bear with me a moment. Needed to respond to that. Oh, I didn't realize it. Okay. So let me just quickly look at some other issues, and let's talk about the French police. They're facing a crisis of confidence, and this is very, very interesting because it may have an impact here in the United States as well. So listen to this report from law enforcement, and this is a video by Florence Villemino. So listen into this.
It's time now for French Connections, our weekly look at the intricacies of life here in France with Florence Villemino. Hi, Flo. Now, this week, we're going to focus on a very touchy subject that's been in the spotlight recently, the French police, allegations of an increase in police violence and a growing crisis of confidence within the French people.
Absolutely, because historically, remember, the relationship between the French and the police has been quite tested. There's long been a certain ambivalence between, towards authority, I guess you could say, and a desire on the same hand for protection from the state. But in recent years, there really has been a downward spiral. And this is quite surprising because remember, not that long ago, in 2015, the year of the Paris attacks, police were seen as heroes.
Absolutely.
But that that image really is long gone these days. According to polls, one in three French people no longer have confidence in the police.
Au fond, on les reconnaît parce qu'ils font beaucoup de bruit. Et le fait est qu'aujourd'hui, ce qu'on voit, c'est des images un petit peu des pommes pourries au sein de la police.
Je pense qu'il faut faire confiance.
Oui, je pense qu'il faut faire confiance. Police, as well as the sanity.
Non, c'est l'anarchie, quoi. Donc on constate.
We're seeing a certain number of incidents of misconduct. It's recurrent. It shows that something is not normal is going on within the police.
Now, this spike in mistrust comes amid public fury over a new security bill, which is deemed a danger to civil liberties.
Absolutely. This is the so-called Loi Sécurité Globale, the Law on Global Security, which is a wide-ranging bill that covers a lot of ground, from creating a municipal police force here in Paris to regulating private security and the use of drones by law enforcement officials. But there's one article in particular that has sparked a lot of fury, and that is Article 24, which would make it a criminal offense to publish images of on-duty police officers with the intent to harm their physical or psychological integrity. Now, critics say this is a direct attack on press freedom, especially the freedom to document police brutality. And the article has drawn fire from a wide range of institutions: Reporters Without Borders, Amnesty International, the United Nations, France's human rights defenders, and it also sparked a lot of protests and demonstrations across the country.
We can no longer film the police, we'll no longer have evidence of police violence, and that's a problem. We're getting to the point where democracy and the rule of law are under threat. If we don't do anything, we could slip into a dictatorship without even knowing it.
Now, as fate would have it, there were actually several instances of police brutality caught on tape as lawmakers started voting this law, including footage of white policemen beating a black music producer whom they allegedly also abused racially, footage that the president, Emmanuel Macron, said shame all of us.
They were certainly very, very shocking images. Now, what happened next was that, facing pressure from the street, the government promised to completely rewrite Article 24, which did draw anger from police unions, I believe.
Absolutely, because the origin of this article, the whole idea behind it, is actually to protect the police from harassment and targeting on social media. And there have indeed been instances of police officers and their families being attacked or threatened. So a lot of people say this is actually a very important bill. But what it has done is actually created a political crisis for President Emmanuel Macron and has put him kind of in between a rock and a hard place. Analysts say that he's playing good cop, bad cop with his hardline interior minister, Gérard Darmanin, that you can see here, who, the interior minister, France's top cop, has repeatedly downplayed the term police violence.
It has become a very charged phrase, police violence, here in France. Now, in recent years, French techniques for policing have come under scrutiny, though, particularly controversial crowd control techniques.
That's right, because up until recently, allegations of police brutality pretty much remained contained to the banlieue, so suburbs around big cities. But it really started coming to the forefront when the Yellow Vest protest movement kicked off in October 2018. French police drew criticism from the European Parliament and the United Nations for excessive use of force on some occasions. Particularly controversial have been the use of crowd dispersing grenades and rubber bullets. These are weapons that have been banned in other countries and that have really caused a staggering number of life-altering injuries among protesters, including head injuries and the loss of eyes and hands.
You can see just how tense those protests get in those images there. But police officers, meanwhile, insist their use of violence is legitimate. Many of them say they're fed up with increasing anti-police sentiment that they're having to face.
Absolutely. Riot police, for instance, say the very nature of their job has changed. These days, some protesters come out with the clear aim of vandalizing and fighting the police.
Sur chaque manifestation,
these days at each demonstration, there are systematically small groups that join the protest with the sole aim of wreaking havoc, vandalizing, and beating up the police.
Keep in mind that many police officers have actually been wounded in clashes with protesters, and this really comes at a tough time for law enforcement agents in France because they've been stretched thin with repeated nationwide protests, the threat of terrorist attacks in France, which is very real, and of course, COVID-19. Fatigue and burnout is growing amongst the ranks of French police officers. And in 2019, a shocking report came out about the suicide rate within the French police. It's actually, on average, one suicide every 4 days, which is staggering. Now, the president says that there is urgent need to reform France's security forces from their working conditions to also community relations. He's promised to beef up trust between the French police and the French people, but some people wonder if it's just too late.
Well, it will certainly be a significant challenge. Thank you very much for that, Flo. Well, that's all we have time for. In the meantime, do tweet your questions to @FloVilmino and check out our website, France24.com.
Okay, so let's quickly look. Let's move on to some other issues. Let's look at what's happening with regard to One Nation, Two States are on display as Erdogan has visited Azerbaijan for Karabakh Victory Parade. Well, during a visit to Azerbaijan today to celebrate his close ally's recent victory in the Nagorno-Karabakh conflict, Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan said Baku's, quote, struggle, end quote, against Yerevan was not over and vowed to carry on the contest on many other fronts. Azerbaijan saving its lands from occupation does not mean that the struggle is over, Erdogan said during a military parade in Baku. The struggle carried out in the political and military areas will continue from now on many fronts. And Erdogan said Karabakh is now reunited with its motherland. Erdogan's visit came weeks after Armenia and Azerbaijan signed on a deal with Russia to end clashes over Nagorno-Karabakh after a string of Azerbaijani victories in its fight to retake the disputed region. Azerbaijan's historic win was an important geopolitical coup for Erdogan, who has cemented Turkey's leading role as a power broker in the ex-Soviet Caucasus region. Well, Turkey backed Azerbaijan during the 6 weeks of fighting that erupted in late September and left more than 5,000 people dead. Ankara was widely accused of dispatching mercenaries from Syria to bolster Baku's army, but repeatedly denied the charge. Well, Erdogan's support is crucial, so say analysts. So Azerbaijan would not have been able to achieve military success in Karabakh without Turkey's open political backing, analyst Elhan Sahinoglu of a Baku-based think tank Atlas told Agence France Press. If not for Erdogan's support, Yerevan's ally Russia, which competes with Ankara for influence in the Caucasus, would have pressured Baku to stop fighting. The ceasefire deal, sp- spurred mass celebrations in Azerbaijan, but as thousands of Armenian residents of the region fled the territory, the pullout was met with fury in Armenia, where Prime Minister Nikol Pashinyan has faced large demonstrations calling for his resignation. The deal saw Armenia cede control over parts of the enclave it lost during the recent fighting and seven adjacent districts it had seized during a war in the 1990s. But the agreement leaves Nagorno-Karabakh's political status in limbo. French President Emmanuel Macron has expressed discomfort over the Russia-brokered ceasefire as France struggles to retain its geopolitical sway in the region following Armenia's defeat. So the enclave will see its future guaranteed by nearly 2,000 Russian peacekeepers deployed for a renewable five-year mandate, and the troops will be monitored in Azerbaijan by Turkish military. Separatists in Nagorno-Karabakh broke away from Baku in a war in the early 1990s that left some 30,000 people dead and displaced tens of thousands of Azerbaijanis. But their claim of autonomy has not recognized or was not recognized internationally, even by Armenia. Armenia accused Turkey of direct involvement in the recent fighting, including sending foreign fighters to the battlefield, allegations dismissed by both Baku and Ankara. Their shared border has been closed since 1993, when the two countries cut diplomatic ties. And Erdogan in 2009 dismissed internationally mediated reconciliation efforts with Armenia and said the ties could only be restored, after Armenian forces withdrew from Nagorno-Karabakh. While the two countries share a deep and mutual distrust over Armenia's efforts to recognize as genocide the World War I massacres of some 1.5 million Armenians in the Ottoman Empire. Turkey has furiously rejected the genocide label. Referred to as one nation, two states, Turkey's alliance with Turkic-speaking Azerbaijan was forced following the Soviet Union's collapse in 1991 and has deepened under Erdogan's tenure. Turkey has helped Azerbaijan train and arm its military and serves as the main route for energy exports to Europe, bypassing Russia. Meanwhile, Azerbaijan links Turkey with ex-Soviet Turkic nations in Central Asia and with China. So, my goodness, there's so much that's going on around the world. So, let me just move on to some other issues. Bear with me a moment. This is very interesting. Evidently, hackers have broken into the Pfizer bio and tech vaccine data in Europe. Bureaucrats, or rather documents related to the Pfizer coronavirus vaccine were illegally accessed during a cyber attack at the European Union regulator. The company said that yesterday, as Germany and other Northern Hemisphere countries grappled with a winter surge in the pandemic. The Amsterdam-based European Medicine Agency reported the cyber attack as European countries eagerly awaited a vaccine, including Germany, where Chancellor Angela Merkel is pushing for tougher action against a second wave of COVID-19 that is proving deadlier than the first there. While the EMA, the European Medicines Agency, did not give details on the attack, Pfizer and BioNTech said that documents relating to their vaccine candidate had been accessed, but that no systems had been breached in connection with this incident. The European Medicines Agency has promised a real decision on conditional approval for Pfizer-BioNTech's vaccine by December 29, with a ruling on Moderna's version to follow by January 12. Canada on Wednesday became the latest nation to approve the Pfizer-BioNTech vaccine a day after Britain gave out the first approval or first approved vaccine jabs in the Western world. The United States is expected to follow suit within days after a Food and Drug Administration advisory panel meets in the on the issue today. But a top government scientist said the FDA would probably ask people with a known history of severe allergies not to take it after two health workers in Britain needed treatment for allergic reactions. So UK warned people with serious allergies to avoid Pfizer vaccine after two adverse reactions. And let's hear this report. It's about 2.5 minutes long on this issue.
Well, as the United Kingdom prepares for the Brexit deadline, it is also at the start of another major national project, the coronavirus vaccine rollout. Yesterday, Britain became the first country in the world to launch its vaccination program. Elderly people and healthcare workers are the first in line. But as medical regulators issued an urgent statement today warning that people with a history of allergies should not get this vaccine. Well, for the latest, let's go to London and talk to our reporter there, Benedict Pavio. Benedict, what can you tell us about the concerns that have been raised today?
Well, so this important advice from the British regulator saying that people with a history of significant allergic reactions should not have the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID jab. This applies, they say, to people who have had reactions to medicines, food, or vaccines. And the two people who had the reaction yesterday, two National Health Service workers, had a reaction shortly after having the jab. They've had treatment. They're both fine now. It's interesting to note that they have a history of serious allergies and that both carry adrenaline pens around with them. So they had what is called an anaphylactoid reaction, which tends to involve a skin rash, breathlessness, and sometimes a drop in blood pressure, I understand. This is not, repeat, not the same as anaphylaxis, which can be fatal. So the reaction of Professor Stephen Powish, the medical director of the National Health Service here, said both individuals are recovering well. This is common with new vaccines. Indeed, we know it happens. For example, there are reactions with the annual flu jab. It's important also to underline that this does not affect the rollout, which is in its second day of this massive vaccination program, a first in the UK and also in the world with this Pfizer-BioNTech jab. And also, it's important to say that 1,000 people in those that have got coronavirus have died, and that we have already had 62,000 people die from COVID-19. So that is what is really concentrating minds here. Apart from this, it's hoped, very small reaction from two people who are now recovering and are well.
All right, Benedict Pavio, thank you very much indeed for bringing us the latest.
Okay, very good. Let's move on to some other things as well. This is very interesting as well. Barcelona's Griezmann says that they're ending the Huawei contract over the Uyghurs' claims. Seems that Barcelona's World Cup winning footballer Antoine Griezmann said Thursday he was ending his sponsorship contract with Huawei over reports the Chinese telecoms giant was involved in the surveillance of Uyghur Muslims. Frenchman Griezmann said on Instagram, following strong suspicions that Huawei has contributed to the development of a Uyghur's alert through the use of facial recognition software, I'm immediately ending my partnership with the company. U.S.-based surveillance research firm IPVM said in a report on Tuesday that Huawei has been involved in testing facial recognition software in China that could send alerts to police when it recognized Uyghur minorities' faces. China has come under intense international criticism over the policies in the resource-rich Xinjiang territory, where rights groups say as many as 1 million Uyghurs and other mostly Muslim minorities have been held in internment camps. China defends the camps as vocational training centers aimed at stamping out terrorism and improving employment opportunities. Well, Griezmann, a 29-year-old forward who was one of the leading members of the France team that won the 2018 World Cup in Russia, has been a Huawei brand ambassador since 2017. Well, so the so China defends the camps as vocational, and Griezmann has featured prominently in a giant advertising campaign for the company in France. Agence France-Presse has contacted Huawei France for a comment. Griezmann made his name with Real Sociedad in Spain before moving to Atletico Madrid in November 2014. He joined Barcelona in a $120 million euro deal, which is worth $145.5 million in 2019, and is expected to be part of the French squad for next year's European Championship. His decision to end the Huawei contract comes at a time when French sports figures, especially high-profile footballers, are increasingly making their voice heard on social and political issues. In posts on his social media accounts last month, Griezmann expressed his disquiet at a video showing French policemen beating a music producer. The video was one of the factors that led President Emmanuel Macron to declare that there is an urgent need to reform the police. On Wednesday, the Paris Saint-Germain team, containing Griezmann's World Cup teammate Kylian Mbappe, walked off the pitch, meaning the field, with their opponents from Istanbul, Başakşehir, in protest at allegedly racist language used by a match official in a Champions League game. Now, Huawei earlier this year became the world's top mobile phone seller. So, very, very interesting the way things are going. This is very frightening. A 6.2 magnitude earthquake has struck off Taiwan. A 6.2 magnitude earthquake struck off Taiwan today, the U.S. Geological Survey said, but while residents in the capital of Taipei reported buildings violently shaking, there were no immediate reports of damage. Well, the quake struck off Yilan City on the island's east coast at a depth of 75 kilometers, that's about 45 miles, at 9:19 in the evening local time, according to the U.S. Geological Survey. Well, Taipei residents reported shaking buildings and the quake felt across the island. My building shook violently and I took my son and fled our home. It's deathly terrifying, wrote one social media user in Taipei. Chen Kuo Chang, the head of the Central Weather Bureau Seismological Center, said the quake was the biggest this year. The earthquake was felt all over Taipei, he said, and with terrorism lacking the support, the earthquake was felt all over Taiwan, tremors lasting for around 30 to 40 seconds, and recent heavy rainfall around Yilan and New Taipei cities meant that authorities should be on guard for mudslides in the surrounding mountains, Chen had added. And Vice President William Lai urged calm, posting on Facebook that the government was monitoring the situation. There have been no immediate reports of serious damage or injuries. Residents in Taipei said they were jolted by the quake, with an Agence France press reporter saying that she felt her building sway, hearing sirens in the distance as she scrambled across her apartment. "It's shaking so powerfully for so long in New Taipei," said one Facebook user. "I thought my house was going to collapse and I was wrecked. And thankfully, there's no damage," she added. Well, Taiwanese TV showed evidence of goods falling from the shelves and clips of roof tiles coming off buildings. "Huge earthquakes just now in Taiwan," wrote a Twitter user who said he was driving home after work from the work when the quake struck. "Though I've blown a flat tire, turned out to be a big quake." Authorities said that service on Taipei's metro was temporarily suspended while they carried out impact assessments. And some high-speed train services were also delayed because of the quake, according to the rail operator's website. And Taiwan is regularly hit by earthquakes, as the island lies near the junction of the two tectonic plates. Hualien, a scenic tourist hotspot, was struck by a 6.4 magnitude earthquake in 2018 that killed 17 people and injured nearly 300. So in September of 1997, a 7.6 magnitude quake killed around 2,400 people in the deadliest natural disaster in the island's history. Very troubling. They're going to have a lot of trouble with this, that's for sure. Let me just quickly look. This is interesting. The French watchdog has fined Google 100 million euros and Amazon 35 million euros for cookie breaches. Well, France's CNIL, a data privacy watchdog, said today it had launched or had fined two Google units, a total of 100 million euros, and an Amazon subsidiary, 35 million euros, over advertising cookies. The regulators said the fines were for having placed advertising cookies on the computers of users without obtaining prior consent and without providing adequate information. A cookie in a small piece of data stored on a user's computer browser that allows websites to identify users and remember their previous activity. The CNIL found the French websites of Google and Amazon didn't seek the prior consent of visitors for advertising cookies. One second, who were saved on computers, it said in a statement. Google and Amazon also failed to provide clear information to internet users about how the two firms intended to make use of such online trackers and how visitors of their French websites could refuse any use of the cookies, the watchdog said. Well, Google was faulted for providing insufficient privacy information for users, as it did not let them know about the cookies which had been placed and that the procedures to block them still left one operational. CNIL also said that Amazon had not provided clear or complete information about the cookies placed on computers for using until redesign in September 2020. So that's going to come about. So that's the story. Could be very, very interesting, to say the least. Well, it looks like we've come to the end of the day. We're going to close down. I need to make a few phone calls. so shutting down early. I hope you enjoy the Hanukkah festivities. And bear with me a moment here. I want to see if I can go and share that information with you. One second. Let me just see. One second. All right, I want to move here to the website, and here it is. It's going to be a Hanukkah schedule because tonight is the night of the first night of Hanukkah, which begins tonight and ends on Friday, December 18th. And you could end up lighting the menorah or the candelabra after sunset each evening. This time, the festivities will take effect on Thursday, December 10th at 5 p.m. And the menorah lighting at Untermeyer Park and Gardens is at 945 North Broadway. And due to the park's COVID regulation, only 25 people will be allowed in, and an RSVP is required because only the first 25 will be allowed. And yet the Chabad of Yonkers will stream it live on the Chabad Facebook page. So on Tuesday, December 15th, they'll be mastering a meeting at the synagogue for the menorah car parade. And so that should be fun. And that's the story. So very, very interesting there. Bear with me a moment as I look to see what else we've got here. Okay. I think we're at it at this point. So I'm going to wish you a great day. Thank you for being with us. And just enjoy. So let me get back to our studio screen. Bear with me a moment here. And, okay, for some reason that's missing. Okay, I'm going to look this up in a second. All right, let me just quickly look here. Evidently, I made a mistake somewhere, so I need to get back to our studio screen. And, okay, we should be okay. All right. Yeah, there we are. So I see it's about 27 minutes to the hour. Normally we'd be on till 11:30, but we have to get going. So I'll speak to you tomorrow. And we're going to be speaking to Ossining Mayor Victoria Garrity from 10 to 10:30, and then it'll just be you and I. So that's the story here. Be well and have a good night. Bye. All right, so let's just see, we're good here. All right, one second.